Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to the Interaction of Processes and Its Importance to a Successful Audit webinar presentation. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am the QMS Program Manager for Perry Johnson Registrars. Our topics for today, we're going to have a little bit of background on where this item comes from, this idea, and why it's so important. We're going to review where this requirement is established within ISO 9001:2015. We're going to have a little bit of discussion on what is and what is not a process. And then I'm going to walk you through some strategies in terms of meeting this requirement. And in particular, if you have an existing representation of your processes, how you might be able to make some very minimal changes and still feel confident that you're meeting the expectations. So way back in 2014, PJR was given a mandate from the accreditation bodies that we answer to. We were told that we needed to start taking a harder line in our assessment of client interaction of process or IOP documents. And the current requirement that reflects on this is in 17021, version 2015. Previous to that, it was 2011. Now that document, that standard, includes a clause that reads as follows. It says that PJR has to establish an audit program for the full certification cycle to clearly identify the audit activities required to demonstrate that the client's management system fulfills the requirements for certification. So to put that in more plain English, PJR is expected to ensure that our auditors are performing and documenting their audits in such a way that they reflect the client's management system, your management system. It would be perhaps easier if we just documented our audits in accordance with the ISO 9001 standard, for example, but the expectation is that these audits will be more value added to you, the auditees, if they are rooted in your management system. And by turn, that means that they're going to be rooted in your processes. So to fulfill that mandate, our policy is that we must adhere to the client's interaction of process document and only the interaction of process document in completing the audit report. Now, if what you have prepared to show us what your processes are doesn't really do an effective job in identifying what your processes are, the auditor's job, as you might imagine, becomes exceedingly difficult. So we've instructed our auditors to issue nonconformances in situations where the client has an IOP that doesn't identify their processes in an appropriate manner. Now, to look to ISO 9001:2015, the requirement to establish an IOP is rooted in three key requirements. First, in 4.4.1, it says that an organization has to determine the processes that are needed for the quality management system. This establishes kind of the core concept that a quality management system is rooted in processes. Then in 4.4.1b, it says that you shall determine the sequence and interaction of those processes. And then finally in 4.4.2, it says that you need to maintain documented information to support the operation of its processes. PJR's interpretation of that requirement is that there needs to be some form of documented information that establishes what your processes are and how they interact with each other. So let's take a step back now and answer the question, well, what is a process? Well, this happens to be a term that is officially defined in the ISO 9000 document. ISO 9000, of course, is the fundamentals and vocabulary document. This is included in ISO 9001 as a normative reference. In other words, these definitions are binding. And ISO 9000 tells us that a process is a set of interrelated or interacting activities, plural, that use inputs to deliver an intended result. Now, as I've already indicated, the key portion of that definition is this phrase, interrelated or interacting activities. This helps us establish a key aspect of what a process is not. It is not a single step. It is a series of activities focused on a shared goal. Now, the following list that I've got here, these are examples of acceptable process designations. And these are actually very, very common. We see these time and time again in the audit reports that we get from our many clients. We see sales, we see purchasing, production even. You know, you might think, well, do I have to break out all of my individual machining centers? Well, not necessarily. It's acceptable to have production be a collective, shipping, design and development. The important thing to bear in mind when you're doing this is your IOP has to reflect what your processes are, how you've defined them. So if that means that your quality management system is made up of four processes, sales, purchasing, production, support, well, fine. That is completely and totally acceptable. So the important thing is that you should have ownership. You should have buy-in. You should understand, yes, those are our processes. Now, in terms of what is not a process, the interaction of process documents that are going to get rejected most often are going to be the ones that present steps within a single process. Let me give you an example. Let's say that we receive an IOP that includes the following five items. Create a work order, issue production schedule, complete a work order, package the product, and ship the product. Now, these five items, it's conceivable that they are steps within maybe one process or two, but are they really processes by themselves? Again, remember how a process is defined. It's a set of interrelated or interacting activities for transforming inputs into outputs. So this would be a concern. An IOP that is presenting sections from the applicable standard, like from ISO 9001, and says, well, these are our processes. That's also going to be regarded with concern. Now, if you think about it, how many organizations are going to have a process that they call resource management? That's ISO speak. That's not typically, at least, that's not typically going to be a recognized process within an organization. We're also going to be concerned about an interaction of a processes document that looks canned, something like that was handed to you by a consultant that you built your system around. Again, as much as possible, you want this to be reflective of what you really are. The buy-in is going to be a lot stronger in that instance. So any of these IOPs that reflect this type of preparation potentially are going to result in nonconformances being issued during the audit process. Now, we do recognize that for a lot of our clients, when you're told that your interaction of processes document is not sufficient, it's a little jarring. It's a little frustrating. You've put some time into this. You feel like this works for you. We've heard that before. Well, look, this works for us, and so forth. So we want to try to share with you some strategies on again, tweaking what you have already to try to meet the requirement, kind of meet us halfway so that we can fulfill the requirements that we're expected to fulfill. So what we're going to do for the next few slides here, we're going to review a sample of an interaction of process document. And we're going to improve it in two key ways. So let's begin by reviewing the raw interaction of processes. Now, please note that this example is not reflective of any particular PGR client. This was developed specifically for this presentation. Okay, so here is our raw interaction of processes. And again, I'd like to point out how some of these items are not processes unto themselves, but steps within a process. In the upper left-hand corner, customer order received. To the right of that, order entered into mainframe system, and so forth. Some of these might be standalone processes. Some of them are definitely steps within a process. So we need to account for that, which we're going to do in just a couple slides here. Our first improvement is going to be to identify support processes. Now, you may have noticed when we were looking at the raw IOP in the prior slide, there's really nothing in there that gets at support activities. So what do I mean by support activities? Well, first of all, understand that these are not mandatory designations. There's nothing in ISO 9000 or 9001 that talks about classifying a process. But we do see this idea of core process and support process often. This is something we see in a lot of our clients' paperwork. So what do we typically mean when we talk about a support process? Well, these are going to be things like management review, internal audit, training, corrective action, and so forth. These are parts of your system, absolutely, but they are supporting the system at large. So how can we represent that? Well, here's an idea. So here is our raw interaction of processes, but now in the lower right-hand corner, you can see we've added a disconnected support process box, and we've kind of put everything in here. These are all items that exist within your system, but they support everything else that's going on, the core activities, if you will. So now this is representation on the IOP that you've prepared. Okay, the second improvement that we're going to do is to create an IOP key. Now this is a very popular strategy, and it's used to identify what the processes are. Now this is usually done by numbering or alpha characters or whatnot. What this does is it enables the IOP to stay as is. It respects the work that's been done, but it serves the quality management system and the audit process by naming what your processes are, as shown by the steps. So let's take a look at what that looks like. Okay, so now we have 13 individual steps on here and two decision diamonds, but now look what we've done. In the lower left-hand corner, we've color-coded our map here so that we know what the various processes are, and we recognize that we have six processes: sales order entry, purchasing, production, shipping, quality, and support. So by these two small adjustments, we've kept the content of the IOP just as we had it before, but we've accomplished two key things. We now know what the processes are, and we've accounted for the support activities as well. This is an IOP that will pass audit assessment. Now, obviously, there's more than one way to go about this. And over the years, we've seen and accepted a lot of different methodologies on this. So we'd like to share some of these additional examples with you. These are from actual current and past PGR clients. Permission was granted in all cases for us to share these examples. Okay, so here is our first example. You'll note that what they've done here, they've prepared kind of a top-down flow, and it kind of shows the life cycle of a customer's order. It flows from contract through purchasing, through engineering, ultimately ending up with shipping. And then on the left, they've acknowledged the existence of the support activities, again, kind of supporting the overall flow of the core activities. This is another way to prepare the IOP. This one's rather busy, of course, but I like this particular example because of how unique the process names are. You can see that this organization put a good deal of thought into, well, what are our processes? They have an overhaul process here. They have what they call a inventory management process and so forth. So again, I don't know that I'm crazy about these arrows going every which way, but this IOP is also appropriate. This is something that our auditor could use to plan out their audit. Here's another idea on how to develop an interaction of process model. This particular one is typically referred to as swim lane. And this is effective for organizations where you have processes that begin, in some cases, independently of each other. It's not always going to be a top-down flow or a left-right flow. For this particular organization, you can see on the left here, they have sales and purchasing, and these two processes start, so to speak, independent of each other. They meet in the middle, and they both ultimately contribute to the production process. But by drawing up the IOP this way, this organization has acknowledged that they don't have a direct A to B connection at the start between sales and purchasing. And that's perfectly acceptable, of course. Obviously, the final swim lane is the support activities. And again, the idea is that these all contribute in an important way to the processes at large. So this is also an acceptable way to identify what your processes are. Here's another idea on how this can be done. This particular organization, they've chosen to use yellow highlighting to indicate what the core processes are. And of course, we would see that they have five of them here. Again, I'd like to point out the unique nature of these process names. You know, they, again, a lot of thought went into this. They have service exchange, distribution. Now, these are unique processes. The other idea of this, of course, is that anything that is not highlighted is a support. So we can kind of group those together in our audit report under the heading support processes. So our audit report, if we were going to do, for example, a recertification assessment for this company, there would be six processes in total, the five core processes plus the support process. So in conclusion, we want to provide you with a value-added audit. We want to make sure that we are not demanding things that are unreasonable, but at the same time, we have to make sure that we are meeting the requirements that we're held accountable to. So it's our hope that the points of our presentation today are going to be helpful to you in developing an even better understanding of what your processes are. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. We have a presentation called ISO 9001:2015, Knowing What to Expect to Ensure a Stress-Free Audit. That is shown on a semi-annual basis. This is an exploration of some of the more common issues that come up in ISO 9001:2015 audits and what you are going to be typically expected to show for those areas. We also have non-applicable clauses, permissible exclusions, exemptions. This is an exploration of exemptions and what to do to ensure that you are only exempting things that can truly and justifiably be excluded. We have webinars on a wide variety of other topics. These are going to include stage one audits, a number of the standards that we provide certification to, and other topics. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the best way for you to do that is to opt in. And that is done by visiting our website at www.pjr.com. If you go to the bottom of the page under your email address in the provided space and click subscribe, you will be opted in for news updates, upcoming webinars, and other points of interest. I do thank you for your time. I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard if anybody has any questions today. Okay, no questions then. I'll wish everyone a happy St. Patrick's Day and thank you for your time.